You're listening to China Africa Talk.
Jambo, ni Bridget akikuletea kipindi kinachohusiana na China na Afrika.
Vous écoutez le dialogue sino-africain avec Bridget.
Everything China, everything Africa.
Olá, você está ouvindo China Africa Talk com Bridget.
سيدتي وسادتي مرحبا بكم في الحوار الصيني العربي مع بريجيت.
You're listening to China Africa Talk. I'm your host, Bridget Mutambirwa, coming to you from the Chinese capital in Beijing, and I bring you more discussions on what's happening with China and Africa from a Chinese and African perspective. China and Kenya have elevated their relationship to a China-Kenya community with a shared future for the new era, marking a new milestone in bilateral ties. The elevation comes as Kenya President William Ruto undertakes a five-day state visit to China from April 22nd to 26th. This is Ruto's first state visit to China since taking office in 2022. He is also the first African leader to visit China since last year's Beijing summit of the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation. During talks with President Ruto, Chinese President Xi Jinping has expressed willingness to work with the international community to address challenges through unity and cooperation and uphold international trade rules and global fairness and justice. Ruto warned that trade wars undermine the existing international order. He praised China's role as a stabilizer and its efforts to safeguard the legitimate rights and interests of global South countries. As Ruto's visit deepens strategic cooperation between the two countries, what concrete outcomes can we expect? And in the face of rising U.S. tariffs, how can countries of the Global South stand together to shape a fair global trade landscape? For more details, I'm now joined by Professor Liu Baocheng, Director of the Center for International Business Ethics at the University of International Business and Economics, and Peter Kagwanja, President and Chief Executive of the Africa Policy Institute based in Kenya. Gentlemen, it's great to have you on the program.
It's always a pleasure.
Pleasure too to be here.
Thank you so much. Now I'll start with you there, Professor Kagwanja. President William Ruto is the first African leader to visit China since the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation Beijing Summit held last September. What are the top priorities of his visit this time around?
Well, it is important to preface the visit of President William Ruto to Beijing. As you've rightly put it, it's the first since the September FOCAC Summit. But it also brings in some other very, very important issues relating to China-Kenya relations. Mm-hmm. The two countries are friendly for now over 60 years. President William Ruto would like China to support the infrastructure project that was started or were being discussed. And during the FOCAC summit, I think there were issues relating to Kenya entering the League of Oil-Producing Countries with the support of China. That need also to come to the table. President Ruto's visit to Beijing, mm-hmm. we can restart the project that was stopped after President Uhuru Kenyatta left office. Topmost is the SGR railway, followed by the infrastructure project, for example, a road from Nairobi to Maraba Highway, possibly to complement, if not to be complemented by what the Americans have proposed to build from Mombasa to Nairobi. We are still waiting. And then, so in a sense, this is really a friendly, very cordial discussion given where Kenya and China are coming from the year 2022, when President William Ruto was elected. So we are switching gears to a very positive future for the two countries to cooperate on all these areas of development. China is by now Kenya's largest partner in many sectors, from trade to investments. And therefore, President William Ruto's coming to China as the first African leader to do that since September is such a salutary and very, very positive development in China-Africa diplomatic relations.
I'd like to know from you, Professor Liu Baocheng, how would you describe the current state of China-Kenya ties?
In China, we have a saying that a long journey is a test of the horsepower and long time is a test of the true heart. So since the 1963, when these two countries set up the formal diplomatic relations, China's side has been showing its high level of consistency in working with Kenya in multidimensional factors from trade to investment to capacity building to humanitarian aid. Without prejudice, I think there has been a roller coaster type of change within the Kenya political regime as how they address the multidimensional type of international relations with its neighbors, with the United States, with Great Britain, et cetera, et cetera. So the swinging pendulum gave quite a level of uncertainty, particularly to the Chinese business community. But now, over the years, we have seen a very robust and dynamic business relationship, per se, in that China is the largest trading partner and substantially reduced its import tariff of all the goods from Kenya in order to bring to an equilibrium of trade balances. And also, China exercises its unique advantage in the infrastructure building. And in the meanwhile, we support with concessional loans and many other forms of investment to team up with Kenya for its industrialization drive and also the modernization of agriculture. Now, look at the railway we have built between the Mombasa and Nairobi, and look at the expressways that we have built in Nairobi. This is a very decisive way of the Kenya people, also the Kenya government, really to boost its connectivity and also to take advantage of its unique service sector in bringing more of global visitors and also in taking on some of the traffic for the neighborhood to be able to fill the government coffer and create more job opportunities. But in the meanwhile, Kenya will have to offer the same level of capacity building so that local people can come up with the right type of skill sets, with the right type of managerial vision in order to be better fitted for a better pay in the projects that we jointly work. President Ruto realizes that China is more accountable and reliable partner. And now when China is also facing a number of challenges, both at home in having a turning around in the digital transformation, in the green transformation, much of the experience and expertise can be shared. And also how we can really work out a better window opportunity to weather the headwinds of a global geopolitical confrontation, particularly to address the whirlwind of the Trump tariff, etc. So there's a whole lot that we put together by this visit, and there's no doubt we're going to achieve some substantial outcome out of such a visit by strengthening the bilateral ties of each other.
Let's get into more discussion there, Professor Gagwanja, on the BRI projects in Kenya. Kenya is a key participant of the Belt and Road Initiative in Africa. Now, how are the Belt and Road projects progressing in Kenya, and how are they contributing to regional integration in East Africa?
Well, as you know, from the old days of Yang Ho and other sailors, Kenya has established itself within the conceptualization of the Silk Roads, whether ancient or modern, as a gateway to Africa. So the port of Mombasa is not by accident that was chosen to be the starting point of the standard gauge railway from the Indian Ocean into the interior.
Right.
It is because this is the place where Chinese sailors and diplomats are really visited many times. And therefore, in the imagination of China's peaceful development with Africa, Kenya is a very, very strategic country. Kenya will remain a pivotal player in the Belt and Road Initiative because of its gateway function. It's not all about Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
It's about Kenya and the region. It's about Kenya and the interior of Africa, Congo to Uganda to northern Tanzania to Rwanda, Burundi. So Kenya is strategic in that sense. Therefore, when you are conceptualizing or thinking about what relationship we have between China and Kenya, we must see Kenya as a gateway. So I want to play that background in order for you to see why the visit by President William Ruto to China now is so important for the Belt and Road Initiative.
Right, right.
Open your eyes. This is the railway that is opening Africa's largest economic belt from Mombasa through almost to the Atlantic Ocean if the dream comes true. But within Kenya, the new economic belt and its weight is already being felt in the speed that Kenya is now beginning to experience the fastest growing industrialization, technology transfer, and exchanges between China and Africa. You can feel that palpitation within Kenya itself as a result of the railway. So the Belt and Road is now felt with the railway, but the railway signifies what you can call a government-to-government relationship.
Right.
And one of the most significant developments since 2017, and particularly with the entry of President William Ruto, is a more business-to-business. We have also moved to the areas of PPP, public-private partnership. In other words, where the government, the people, and the investors come together in that triangulated relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning now, the relationship between China is more sustainable today. We have a lot of growth that is now investment-driven rather than being driven government. And the Belt and Road Initiative itself is metamorphosizing, changing in a manner that it is the Belt and Road Initiative is now more sustainable in Kenya than it was about 5 years ago. Why do I say so? Because we have seen roads like expressway. I was talking about the 30 kilometer or so road that joins the city of Nairobi to the farthest west and the airport. Mm-hmm. A journey that used to take us about 3 hours of traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's only taking 17 minutes. A road has opened investment to the east of Nairobi. And that road cost the Kenya government no dime.
Let's talk about agriculture collaboration with China and Kenya. We know that agriculture remains a vital pillar of Kenya-China cooperation, and Chinese consumers have enjoyed Kenyan avocados for years. Now, President Ruto is expected to inaugurate the Kenya Tea Holding Center in Fujian province. How significant is this development, and what further opportunities exist for agriculture collaboration?
I think the most important thing for the two leaders to explore, and those of us who have been called from time to time to give our views on this, is to understand the Chinese market, because Kenya understands the British market.
Okay.
It also understands the markets of British dependencies, like Pakistan, Egypt, and the whole of Europe where we sell our tea.
Okay.
But what we have not done is to understand the dynamics and the tastes of the Chinese market.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it is one thing to say that we want to sell tea to China,
mm-hmm.
but the question is, those of us in Africa, particularly in Kenya, need to understand the dynamics of the Chinese market
mm-hmm.
and the tastes of that particular market.
Professor Liu, how can countries like Kenya and China lead the way in promoting a more inclusive and multipolar world?
Very broad question, but what has been intriguing, brought up by Peter,
mm-hmm.
is that how they address the Chinese market with the Kenya unique products.
Mm-hmm.
Do not worry. My answer is that we Chinese people eat anything of four legs but a table. we eat anything with two wings but a chopper. But the issue is that how Kenya can really build the right type of perception
mm-hmm.
within the Chinese consumers in their preference.
Mm.
In terms of your question, Bridget, I think the first homework is that both countries need to deal with their own governance issue in a better way. For example, China is having a very tough hand by President Xi Jinping over corruption issues.
Mm-hmm.
Kenya is no exception. In terms of the corruption index, in terms of transparency index, they are still ranked rather low. So you need really to build up a very sound and more accountable government
mm-hmm.
In order to deal with better predictability and business environment for global investors and traders, and even also for your home companies.
Mm-hmm.
Second, still the infrastructure building, because that means the delivery, not only in terms of the cost of money, but a cost of time and also people's expectation in delivering the contractual obligations. In an international arena, we can do quite a lot. One is that because WTO, in which both of our countries are member of, needs a further reform to expedite,
mm-hmm.
Particularly its dispute settlement system. So we can make a great more efforts, particularly now under the tornado generated by Donald Trump. in circumventing and sabotaging the global trading system. And then on a regional basis, because when WTO is now having a standstill, more of the regional blocks are coming up. Mm-hmm. And Africa does really come up with a very comprehensive continental free trade agreement. But because Africa has been so large and more of the regional pacts can work better with China, for example, the East African Union can really jump the gun to work on a more comprehensive part with China in terms of trade and investment in the reduction not only of the tariff, but also many other non-tariff barriers. And then both of these countries need to take initiative, particularly on the Kenya side, mm-hmm. is that, okay, what do I want? For example, in reinventing the agriculture, my understanding that 75% of the people are devoted to the farming work in Kenya, but they only generate 25% of the GDP. Mm-hmm. So how they can really invite more of the Chinese scientists to grow the type of seeds, to mm-hmm. deal with better weather forecast, to have more planting, and also sign a pact so that China can even prepay for the crop that is going to be delivered in the next harvest. So this gave people better capability and better incentive to grow modern agriculture. Mm-hmm. And then the irrigation system is the key to deal with the droughts, which may hurt the crop in a very destructive way. So to work with China on the specific hydraulic issues, on the energy issues, and also on the irrigation system design so that you save water, but in the meantime to have the resilience over the extreme weather. So these are really the issues that the Kenya side need to take a stronger initiative to work with China, because China is now fully open, but China is being wooed by so many global partners. Hmm. So let's see whose voice is stronger.
Professor Kagwanja, with the United States unveiling new trade tariffs expected to impact global trade significantly, how can Kenya and China work together to uphold multilateralism and promote open and inclusive trade?
As you know, Kenya has been in negotiation with the United States for kind of bilateral trade agreements, and both Trump 1 and Joe Biden, both varying in the way they want to accommodate Kenya into their market. Okay. And for me, that was very positive because it meant that Kenyan and Chinese producers in their joint venture, you know, would expand Kenyan market and make Kenya more attractive even to the Chinese and other markets. Of course, it has access to other global markets, mm-hmm. which is what, you know, Egypt has as an advantage over Kenya. What, you know, let's say Morocco has as an advantage over Kenya, because it has access to the European Union market, you know, in a more accessible way than Kenya. Mm-hmm. That's it. Those negotiations will go on. So as we move now beyond the Donald Trump's tariff, because they have become part of reality, like Kilimanjaro is part of this reality of this part of the world, we have to live with that. Mm-hmm. The good news is that if Donald Trump was doing this in the 1980s or was doing this in the early 1990s, it would have hurt the world, hurt both China and Kenya in a very, very fundamental way. Okay. But now the global south is beginning to become the fulcrum of the global economy. Nice. Very, very quickly, the global south is becoming the fulcrum. If you look at the power of BRICS itself, just the power of BRICS vis-a-vis the G7, Donald Trump would have to realize that American tariffs are only going to hurt America. Yes, for a while, because we live in a globalized economy, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. they are going to affect everyone. But ultimately, it's America that's going to suffer because the world is globalized and the global economy is shifting southward. China-Kenya relationship is important. But what is important for the two countries is to explore new frontiers of engagement, deepening those engagements and forming a new global trade environment, and therefore reduce their vulnerability to the American whims and dreams about tariffs. For the rest of us, we are more concerned about the growth of the global economy, this shared prosperity. We are not shared about who is the watchman, mm-hmm. and who is the gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. We are more concerned about whether we are pulling our people out of poverty. That's the main concern now.
Perhaps in addition to what Professor Kagwanja is saying there, Professor Liu, when we, you know, talking about China and Kenya development and moving forward together, China's development path has yielded impressive results over the past decade, while African countries hold vast development potential. As Kenya pursues modernization, what shared development priorities should both sides focus on moving forward?
From the Chinese side, I think there's a lot that can really be shared with Kenya. In the first place, if we look at 40 years ago, China conducted substantial reform in its governance structure by reducing government bureaucracy and let the market function. Second, we opened the door to the world to attract foreign investment without discrimination, particularly focus on the manufacturer sector. And at home, we build further infrastructures from highways to railways to airports, etc. And then gradually, we'll build up more special economic zones in which I think Kenya is already mimicking the Chinese way of special economic zones like the Athi River and Dogo Kudu, if my pronunciation is right,
as
a special economic zone. But within the special economic zone, you cannot just say, draw a circle, okay, guys, you know, make your stuff here. Mm-hmm. You got to give the right type of tax breaks. You give them the fast way of the currency convertibility and also give them the legal protection, and particularly to prevent the excessive interference of government officials into their operation and prevent nepotism. You know, you cannot allow a government officer and go and tell the investors, okay, I got a nephew, you have to position himself as a chief manager. And then you need to set up an ecosystem to support, because no operation can really stand alone. So the local feeder lines will have to be generated. For example, if you really set up a motor plant factory, so there can be in the ecological system, there are someone who make lights, someone who makes the pedals, someone who makes a horn, etc., etc. This way, you're always really able to give a better and long-term attraction for foreign investment. And then gradually from manufacturer sector, you go to the financial sector so that you allow more of the free convertibility, and the banking system need to boost their efficiency. And then you go to the service sector. Lastly, you go to high tech. You support the top-notch scientists on a global basis to work together to cater to the acute needs of the local environment. So gradually it leads to the level of modernization. The key test is that when Deng Xiaoping raised the three benefits, it's still very viable. One is that does any of your economic policy benefit your own people? Does it help to raise their livelihood of the individual households? So you can't say, oh, I built a strong army, but when many people are still living in subsistence, so that's not really a good strategy. And two is that that they really contribute to the further modernization drive, both on the infrastructure and also on the institutional level. And then, you know, does it help to further beef up your human capacity? Now that, you know, Kenya has the Vision 2030, economic growth does not really deliver the point, although it is still moderately growing. Mm-hmm. And so when you really start at a lower level of the GDP, it is easier to achieve a double-digit growth. So that depends on how you really manage the governance, how do you manage the economy, and how do you manage economic relations, particularly with major partners that are more accountable.
Oh, well, on that note, we will end our discussion. I'd like to thank you there again, Professor Kagwanja and Professor Liu Baocheng, for sharing your insights on this discussion on President William Ruto's visit to China and, of course, the overall bilateral ties between Kenya and China.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can subscribe to our online newsletter on CGTN or Substack to get more insights on China-Africa relations. Just search China-Africa Talk. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others.
post it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Thanks again. See you next time.